Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. It's not really an official committee meeting. It's a working group, if you will. But we do have the draft of the education finance omnibus bill prepared. It will be introduced as a bill as soon as the House reconvenes in session. So the green jackets are there. But what you all have is a copy of that draft, which will become a bill with a number, hopefully as soon as we're finished. And so I just wanted, we believe it will be House file too. But I just wanted to open, first of all, by thanking the members here who obviously all the conferees from House File 890, the conference committee report that we worked on in the session that just ended, just yesterday, feels like longer. And thank all of you for your input, for your hard work, for your excellent work on your committees throughout the session. And I wanted to say a special thank you to our staff, both partisan, nonpartisan, especially our committee administrator, Harry Kennedy, researcher Amy Roberts, Doreen Keynes, who's our committee legislative assistant, who had to go upstairs, our incredible nonpartisan staff, Christina Pera, Emily Adrians, and Tim Strom. And I'll let Senator Nelson introduce the Senate staff. But before I turn to you, I just wanted to say a special thank you to Senator Nelson, who I've been privileged to work with so closely on this bill and through a very trying personal time for you, Senator Nelson. I know we have all had you in our thoughts and prayers, and I know how I just can't imagine how difficult to have to do all of this with what's been happening with your family recently and your father's passing. So I just wanted you to know how much we admire your stamina and your perseverance, and so thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe I can address that first and really thank all of you for your compassion and concern during this time. And let me just say, I think it was no accident that the topic du jour, the topic that we are so focused on in the final minutes of my father's life was education. And there's no doubt in my mind that that timing was accidental in any way. And we were with the governor at the very moment that information came in. So I want to thank you for that concern and let you know my family appreciates that and also the flexibility, because as many of you know, I was gone on Saturday to be with my father, and the week before took a couple days where I was able to be with him when he was alert, and so that was very special. So I thank you for that. And about the work in front of us now, as in most things in life, it's really the staff who really do such a great job of putting all the pieces together, and I would say in many times keeping all of us on schedule and on track. And their invaluable knowledge and dedication I so support. And that would be my committee administrator, or my committee CLA, who could not be here tonight, Glycy Bailey, but we thank her for her expertise and her passion in making sure that I was able to run those meetings correctly and organize. And then, of course, my CA, Greg Marcus, who everyone knows because of his longtime dedication with education, and I so appreciate that, Greg. You've just been phenomenal. And then, of course, I don't see Mr. Cook. Where's Ed Cook, our researcher, who is invaluable, who is walking in. Ed, we're glad you're here. Thank you so much. So we appreciate, Ed, I'm just so thankful for your expertise and always being able to find the answers in a very understandable and cogent way. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then we have our nonpartisan staff. We have Jenna Larson and Bjorn Anderson, who have done a phenomenal job with all of the numbers, and there's probably no other committee jurisdiction with greater numbers and complexity of those numbers, really, than education. So thank you for that. And Anne Marie Butler, the ability to get our thoughts into workable legal language, thank you. Thank you so much. So, and we could not do these things without our staff. And as you all know, the hours are not predictable. So thank you for your dedication.
All right. Well, thank you, Senator Nelson. And again, thank you to all of the members and most especially our staff. And Mars, I did not forget you. I promise. Thank you. He's a DFL researcher and obviously an important part of our team as well. So thank you. And I think I just want to say I'm going to let the nonpartisan staff go through the major provisions of the bill. And I think what we'll do is we'll just highlight really the changes from the conference committee report, because much of the conference committee report, in fact, I would say virtually all of it was retained. And so what we did in this is added to that product for the bill that will be introduced shortly. I think we did the work that I think many of the schools were hoping we would do. I think it is a very good bill for funding education, for putting our students first in Minnesota. I know the formula was first and foremost on everyone's mind as the top priority for where we should devote our funds, and that is what we have done. We are at a 2% each year increase in the formula, so 2 and 2. Which was the goal that we all shared and shared that with the governor. So very pleased we were able to do that. We've got some additional money for early childhood, additional scholarship money, as well as money for some school-based programs and a new program, School Readiness Plus, which will be an option for schools to apply for in a grant pool. Which I think will be a great new option with flexibility for the schools, again, to be able to target their resources for those four-year-olds who need it most to be kindergarten ready. And I want to publicly especially thank Commissioner Casellas for kind of bringing us this idea, this in a good format where we could latch on to that. And I think it really was sort of what bridged the gap for this bill to be put together and the agreement reached. So I want to thank her especially for that. So with that, I think I'll just go ahead and let staff walk through the bill. And I don't know who's starting. Mr. Arneson, if you want to start us off.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The members, per the Chair's instruction, I'll highlight the provisions that are different from the conference report. So if you look into bill text, it would the first such section would be on page 9 of the bill text, the section relating to the basic formula allowance. And as the Chair has indicated, the formula allowance in this draft increases by 2% for fiscal year 2018 and an additional 2% for fiscal year 2019. The next section that is substantively different would be on page 11, section 12. This is the section that calculates the split between operating capital, levy, and aid. And this section was in the conference report, though the aid levy splits here have to be different because of the different approaches to the pre-kindergarten programming between the conference report and the bill text in front of you. The next difference would be section 15 on page 14. This section relates to certain audit procedures from the Department of Education. This provision was introduced in the governor's finance bill and did receive some hearings in the House and Senate, but was not included in the conference report. And this document does include this provision as introduced by the governor. And finally, on page 15, section 18 is a section relating to the Eagle Valley School District dissolution and reorganization. And some may be aware that the school district is undergoing a involuntary dissolution at the end of this school year. It can be a difficult situation, as you might imagine, and so this provision would allow bonds to be sold to help finance the dissolution of the district, to settle its operating debt, and it provides for issuance and repayment and levy for service of those bonds. And I believe, Madam Chair, that is the extent of the differences in Article 1 between the conference report and this document.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Ms. Butler?
Madam Chair, members, in Article 2, Education Excellence, there's some minor language changes. On page 33 is the ACT reimbursement language, and there's a clarifying language that the student who's eligible for a free or reduced price meal, is the cost is waived for that student. And then the next language change in Article 2 would be on page 38. These, section 18 at the top, student participation, and then it's language regarding the commissioner's forum for parents to review if they are thinking about or planning for their child to opt out of the statewide assessments. Then on page 43, sections 21 and 22 are been referred to the LIFO language, and the effective date has been clarified or changed to July 1, 2019. And then moving on then to page 57, section 41 is the beginning of the charter school provisions, and we have taken language that said a free preschool or free kindergarten program, and because of the new program as part of the agreement, took out the word free just to make sure that the fee-for-service programs also would be included. So that the word free was in that section a few times. Then moving on to page 71, section 53, entitled the Commissioner of Education must submit ESSA plan to legislature. That section has changed, took out a lot of the requirements, and just directed the Commissioner to submit the plan, and the legislature may comment if they like, and then having alignment with the world's best workforce measures. Then I think the next changes, I think, are just in some of the riders, if I can find it quickly. There was a, let me get that far on the page. Oh, the writer on page 81 for the professional's pathway to teacher licensure, the Grow Your Own, that paragraph C is new. And I think there was some discussion of it at the end of the conference committee to have something like this in there, but it wasn't in there at that time. So, and I think that's it for the writer step in Article 2. And, Madam Chair, sorry, then on page 86, the repealer is related to the LIFO section, so that effective date also changed to July 1, 2019.
All right. Article 3. Kara?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Article 3 was previously House File, from House File 140, the teacher licensure bill, and it's the article dealing with the licenses themselves. The Pelsby article will be later on. So I will just highlight the changes there, and primarily we're looking at the Tier 1 changes. That's Section 10 in the bill, in the article, I'm sorry. For Tier 1 licenses, for renewal, there's a requirement for a content exam that the teacher take a content exam in that first year, and also have cultural competence training in that first year. There's also a clarification in these sections that the background checks are under the the section, the statutory section on other background checks, just that that's all consistent. In Tier 2, there's also a requirement for cultural competency training in the first year and that the teacher participate in cultural competency professional development. In Tier 3, there are changes to the coursework section, how a teacher can fulfill that requirement. There was a clarification for the Tier 4 licenses, clarifying that a teacher must complete a teacher preparation program, where previously it referred to coursework. Now it says teacher preparation program. Madam Chair, I believe those are all the changes from House File 140 in that article.
Thank you. And I think I just wanted to recognize Representative Erickson and Senator Pratt for their excellent work on heading up the teacher licensure reform, both the governance structure and actual this tiered licensure structure. It's been an enormous undertaking. And would either of you like to say anything very briefly about that at this time? Representative Erickson? No? Representative Pratt?
Well, I'd like to thank Representative Erickson, and I thank the staff as well as the the commissioner. She put in a lot of hours on this as well, but we had some good conversations. I think we have a section here. We talk about this being a section of law that really hasn't changed much in 40 years. And so this is substantial change that's supported well across the education, I don't know if you call it an industry, but I'm very proud of the work that Representative Erickson and did as we came together, and I'm proud to move this forward.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. And yes, I know how very, very hard you all work and your staff work to do this. So thank you. I think it's a great product, and I think we have met any concerns of the governor, and it's in the bill that contains the financing for it as well, and it is fully funded. So glad we're getting this across the finish line too. So, all right, Article 4.
Madam Chair, committee members. Article 4 is the special education article, and there's just one significant difference from the bill as it left conference committee. That's section 11 on page 130. This section is intended to help the Monticello School District. The district is facing cash flow issues due to a special education adjustment, in part because of some changing pupil counts and in part because of Monticello formerly serving as a fiscal host for a special education cooperative. When the new data was finally cleaned up a little earlier this year, it became apparent that Monticello had been overpaid by about $800,000. So this provision is designed to allow Monticello to pay that money back over a two-year period. It shifts the money within the biennium, so there's no cost of this provision. And so, Madam Chair, this is really the only difference from the conference report from a few days ago.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Article 5. Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair, Article 5 is the facilities and technology article. If members and audience go to Section 7, that would be the first new section of language. The conference report proposed to eliminate the Purpich Center for Arts Education. This bill draft does not propose that, but does propose some governance and leadership reforms. So the first section, Section 7, relating to governance, provides that the board consists of 16 people and includes the Commissioner of Education as an ex officio member. Section 8, following, requires that the director of the Purpich Center hold a Minnesota superintendent license and that all people employed as teachers hold teaching licenses in their field or be otherwise approved by the Board of Teaching. The next section, Section 9, there's new language near the bottom of page 136 requiring the board of the Purpose Center to publish minutes of its meetings on the center's website. The next section, Section 10, requires the director of the Purpose Center to make an annual report to the legislature on the center's outreach activities, program activities and the impact of those activities, enrollment trends, and student academic achievement. And I believe, Madam Chair, that is the extent of the new language differences from the conference report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Article 6.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. I'm looking for a signal here.
Madam Chair, in fact, I don't believe there are any changes other than appropriations that had to be adjusted from the report. Things came out, but nothing added in.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Butler. Mm-hmm. Article 7, Ms. Parra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 7 is libraries, and there were no substantive changes to Article 7.
All right. And Article 8, I know there's changes here.
Madam Chair, members, Article 8 is the early education article, and perhaps easiest to talk about the big change are the compromise that the conferees reached with the governor included providing $50 million of additional funding for pre-kindergarten services. And part of the vehicle for doing that was the creation in Section 9 on page 151 of the School Readiness Plus program. The program is modeled as a bit of a collaborative between a voluntary pre-kindergarten program and a school readiness program. In Section 9, the criteria are laid out for this program. And essentially what will happen is the commissioner will reopen the application process for fiscal year 18 and allow school districts and charter schools to apply to participate in either the voluntary pre-kindergarten or the School Readiness Plus program. And once the application process is done, the expedited application process is done, the commissioner will use a list similar to the list that she's used for voluntary pre-kindergarten, with the addition on that list of the of the mixed delivery system. Thank you, Madam Chair. On subdivision 3 there on page 152. And once the ratings are done, the cap was expanded, converted from a dollar cap to a per pupil cap, and that cap was essentially expanded by 3,000 students the first year and another 1,000 students for the second year for fiscal year 19. So the program will spend about $50 million over the 2 years, roughly doubling the program size the first year and adding about 1,000 more students the second year. That's the main change. There were a few smaller changes to the voluntary pre-kindergarten program, and one other change was the for the early learning scholarship program. For the Pathway 2 part of that program, instead of the slots being a frozen number, the amount is a dollar value that's frozen that goes to the Pathway 2 scholarships. And Madam Chair, I believe those are the main changes of the early education article.
Thank you. And Mr. Strom, just the one other change was the extension of the requirement to be 3 and 4 star rated. Is now extended out to the year 2020.
Yes, thank you.
That was a change from the conference committee of 2020. And that's the end of that article, right?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Article 9, Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair, Article 9 is the community ed and prevention article, and I don't believe that there were any changes from the conference report in this article.
All right, thank you. Article 10.
Madam Chair, Article 10 is the self-sufficiency in lifelong learning, and there were no substantive changes there.
Great. Article 11.
Madam Chair, members, most of the changes to Article 11 involve the appropriations that the fiscal analysts will talk about. Essentially, the combination of House File 140 into this bill puts the funding in place for PELSPY as well, and the functions of the Department of Education in regard to the licensure that were contingently transferred to the PELSPY board are now officially transferred under this provision. But when the fiscal analysts go through, they'll explain the financial differences from where the bill left conference committee.
Great. Article 12.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Butler.
Yes, Madam Chair. Article 12 is the formation of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. It's only moved to the conference report because it was in House File 140, but there's no changes from that file.
Thank you. Let's see. So we now have an Article 13.
And Madam Chair, members, Article 13 is unchanged. It's the forecast article. And if I could, Madam Chair, I'd like to point out one mistake that I made in the draft earlier. The pupil transportation adjustment remains at the level, at the 18% level, the $2 million per year level. And there's an amendment that's been drafted to address that later. But just so the audience knows that there's no change as to how that program left the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And let's see, is that the end of the articles? Are we
yes.
ready? Okay, so who would like to do the fiscal? I'll start. Adrian?
And Madam Chair members, Ms. Larson and I will trade off a bit to go through the numbers.
Good plan.
We will try to go quickly and just highlight for all of you the biggest changes since the conference committee, but I'll also touch on the funding items just so you're aware of what is still in there as well. So as was mentioned, the basic formula increase has changed, that it is up to 2% in both years, and the funding for that it begins on lines 9 and 10. Compensatory is one of the programs that is linked with the basic formula allowance increase. So compensatory will go up about $36 million in the first biennium and then $51.6 million. In the tails, for the basic formula allowance increase, the cost of that is $332 million in the first biennium and then about $483 in the second. The other items in that top general ed piece are all the same as what left the conference committee, so I believe none of those have changed. And then if you will look down to lines 31 and 32, the non-public pupil aid and transportation pieces, those are also programs that are linked to the formula, so those increases change slightly because of the percentage increase that the basic formula changed. So that's $300,000 in the first year for public non-public pupil aid, $150,000 in the tails, and then just over $1 million for non-public pupil transportation, and then $430,000 in the tails. If you will continue down through Education Excellence, I believe the programs that had funding in the conference report have remained unchanged. The African American Registry, Ag Educators, Alternative Teacher Prep, the Civics Education Change, Collaborative Urban Educator, these are all the same as what was in the conference report. The Concurrent Enrollment Teacher Training Grants and the Education Innovation Partners are all the same. On page 2, to continue the Education Excellence programs, the Foster Kids Stability Program is the same. The Grow Your Own Paraprofessionals remain the same as the conference report. The Inter-District Desegregation Transportation, the School District Mental Health Grants, those are both the same changes as were in the conference report. Math Corps and Minnesota Center for the Book remain the same. The increases for the museums and educational centers, that remains the same. The Principals Academy, Race to Reduce Water Conservation Grants, and those two are the same. Reading Corps changed slightly. The increase it receives is now $2.65 million in the 18-19 biennium and $4.65 million in the TAILS. The recovery program grants, Brock and Reed, and the Rural Career and Tech Education Consortium, those all remain the same as they were in the conference report, as well as the SANA Foundation. The SMSU Special Ed Teacher Education Program, that remains the same, as well as the statewide regional partnership. I believe this is the same. It's $750,000 increase in both bienniums. The APIB STEM grant program is the same. The Starbase STEM program, this number changed slightly. It came to our attention that the amount of funding that they would have to be canceled and then reappropriated, it changed just slightly. So for that cancellation, it would be $850,000 would be canceled in 2017, and then that same amount reappropriated in 2018. So that has no additional cost to the targets. So the appropriation, the total appropriation for 18 and 19 only changes by $350,000. And then their base funding remains the same for 2020 and 21. The Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program, that number remains the same. It's a one-time increase of $500,000. The tribal contract schools, this is a new amount, so the funding would be $3.728 million in the 18-19 biennium, and then $211,000, I'm sorry, this is the increase over base, so the change, it's the funding in 18-19 is the same as was in the governor's original budget requests. And then under standards and assessment, the ACT reimbursement line, that number is the same as was in the conference report.
Okay. Ms. Larson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. On page 3, there are a couple of changes. Most of them relate to the restoration of the voluntary pre-K program from the conference report. The charter school building lease aid was affected by that. It is no longer under the special education. That is no longer affected. On line 123, you will see the Monticello district adjustment that Mr. Strom had mentioned. This will allow them to spread that adjustment out over 2 years. As a result, in fiscal year 2018, their appropriation will be increased by $800,000. In fiscal year 2019, it will be reduced by $800,000 for a net change of zero. Under the facilities and technology, line 135, the long-term facilities maintenance, and the debt service were originally affected by the voluntary pre-K repeal, but they are no longer. The school lunch and breakfast programs were affected by the voluntary pre-K repeal, but they are no longer. So that is it for the changes on page 3. On page 4, the school readiness adjustment from the conference report was removed. That was the hold harmless provision for the voluntary pre-K. On line 176 is the school readiness plus program. So that will be $50 million for the 18-19 biennium. And there will be a small cleanup payment of $2,910,000 in fiscal year 2020. The early learning scholarships on line 177, those were increased from the conference report by $1.65 million. On line 178, the ECFE, that is linked to the formula allowance increase of 2% and 2%. As a result, it will increase by approximately $2.9 million for the 18-19 biennium and approximately $4.3 million for the TAILS. The rest of the early childhood and family support programs are the same as the conference report. The community support services are the same as the conference report, including the Northside Achievement Zone, St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, and Education Pilot Transformation Zone appropriations. Self-sufficiency and lifelong learning, that has no change from the conference report. And so that wraps up page 4. And with that, I will turn it over to Ms. Adrians, who will discuss the agencies. Ms. Adrians?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Ms. Thurston helped remind me that I did miss a pretty major change that we had made between this and the conference report. So if you'll turn your attention back to the first page, the voluntary pre-K repeal that no longer is in this bill. So where it had shown up as a significant savings on both lines 15 and 16 through the aid and levy, those are now zeroed out. So I just wanted to return to that. And then for the state agency budgets, the changes on page 5, for the Department of Education, there is now a $6 million increase for the agency operating activities in 2018 and 19, and there is $4 million of this is for legal costs that the agency incurs, and then $2 million is an ongoing amount just for agency operating activities for the more general in the more general sense. On line 224. This was a request that was in the governor's original budget for a mainframe update. And so that's $3.25 million in 2018 and 19. That's a change from the conference report. And then the other items, the Board of School Administrators and the licensing staff switched to the Board of Teaching. This is the same as it was in the conference report. And another change that I wanted to point out here, so previously we did not have funding for a lot of these writers, similar to how the was in the original governor's budget. So now it's been reinstated. So the regional centers, the school safety tech center, the LEAPS implementation, I believe, had been didn't have a funding piece there, and then the financial data analysis as well. So those are all reinstated in this. And then for the Board of Teaching, we did not have the language before, but we did have the funding. So this funding is the same as we had in the conference report. For the Minnesota State Academies, the budget will be increased, and these items are similar to the governor's request. So increased funding for facility safety and accessibility improvements, an increased operating adjustment, and then specific operating adjustments for the Academy for the Blind and the Deaf. So the increase overall for the agency is $2.78 million in the first biennium, and then $800,000 would be ongoing. And then Purpich Center, as was discussed, so the school is now returned back to their base funding. And there are just a few items that are different. Previously, the Turnaround Arts Program had been listed under the Department of Education, and now that it will be back under the purview of the Purpich Center. And then there's an item on line 268. This is before, when Purpich was going to be closed, there was money set aside for severance payments that would be needed for the closure of the school. And now there are severance payments just for Crosswinds. And that's $1.2 million for the first biennium. And I think that is it, Madam Chair.
So, Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And with that, we can turn to the Education Finance Levies spreadsheet. That one is timestamped 7:48 p.m. There are just a couple of changes on here. So the first one would be on line 11, the operating capital, which I believe Mr. Arneson mentioned, has been adjusted from the conference report. This was originally an adjustment for the voluntary pre-kindergarten repeal. Now it is an adjustment to balance out the School Readiness Plus program. So on line 11 in column E, you will see a reduction of approximately $2.1 million to operating capital in pay 2017. On column H, pay 2018, there is a reduction of approximately $3.8 million. And there are no adjustments for pay 2019 or pay 2020 at this time. The referendum adjustment on line 18 is the same as the conference report. That is for the Kelleher School District, which will allow them to spread an adjustment over several years rather than making one lump sum payment. And then finally on line 56 is the School Readiness Plus levy adjustment. This will allow districts to levy an additional amount to help with the School Readiness Plus program. So in column D, you will see that number is approximately $2.1 million. And for pay 2018 in column G, that would be an increase of approximately $3.8 million. And with that, Madam Chair, that wraps up the levies.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Larson. So that's it. All right. So any quick questions or comments from the members? Yeah, we actually can't vote because it's not a bill yet, but... All right, Senator Weaker.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairs of Working Group. And I know on the money side that there were improvements. I deeply appreciate the 2 and 2, the additional investment in early ed, and several other provisions. Very good things. But I'm troubled with the LIFO provision where we've had no testimony. This was not an initiative, as you know, from the Senate. I don't believe, Senator Pratt, you had hearings on this at all this year. There was not a sense of urgency. It's something that could have been and maybe negotiated now. I didn't have school boards coming to me, you know, asking for it, etc. I know how strongly teachers feel about this issue, the people that we're trying to help. And in our quest for transparency and what's been done, I'm a member of the conference committee and a member of the work group, but I haven't really been a part of, you know, what you've put together. And I understand how that process works, especially if you're in the minority. But I've had a great deal of angst expressed by many of the teachers in my district since they just found out about this, as did I. You know, you hear rumors, you're asking people, you know, what's happening, but it just puts a real sour taste in, almost a poison pill, you know, in what's being done by several other good initiatives, by what they feel is really going to, you know, undermine morale, et cetera, where it can be negotiated, but, you know, fear of, you know, losing job because of any number of reasons. I know it has to be negotiated. We're not here to go through a debate. We're not going to have testimony, and I understand this is an agreement. But it does frustrate me because we, in the Senate, we have not discussed this. There hasn't been a need to, a sense of urgency. There's been no testimony here to do that. So... on LIFO, that's a problem, and licensure, I worked with you in the summer, and others. Improvements had been made, but it still didn't get to where I think it needed to be, on particularly for Tier 1. And the teachers who are most concerned about it, and I recognize the majority of the House conferees are teachers, and you're for it, but... I don't believe it's in the best interest of students, of the public, for the way the language is for that right now. Again, I have some concerns about Pathway 2 for the freeze. But other than that, I mean, those are main items, and we're here to just find out what you agreed to. So I'm finding out what you agreed to. I'd want to at least share that, absent no chance for amendments or testimony.
Thank you, Senator Wigger. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Madam Chairs, members of the committee, I haven't read the read it. I appreciate the walkthrough before we go to the floor. I think that's very important. And I sure like this bill better than the previous one. And I'm so pleased that the Purbridge School is in the Readiness Plus. I'm anxious to see how we will launch that and carry it out. The academies were improved, and the licensure that's in here is improved also. So I think that a lot of people have talked in the hallways and byways and who knows where else. I don't know. And all the talking did not take place in public, but I strongly approve the improvements. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We appreciate that very much. Senator Prem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could just ask Ms. Larson real quick. So if my math is right, based on the February forecast, the baseline increased $859 million plus of fiscal year 16-17 to 18-19 at about a 5% increase. I'm looking at the back page of the
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Mr. Pratt, I'm sorry, Senator Pratt, looks like you have some pretty good math skills there. I hadn't quite looked at that very closely yet, but I would agree with your statement. Yes. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Larson. And so if I read this correctly, going from next biennium into the tails, rather than increasing almost $860 million, will be increasing just under $600 million for a 3.2% increase?
Senator Pratt, I believe that is correct. I don't have the exact percentages calculated out here, but it looks like that might be approximately the correct number. Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Well, this isn't my comment, Madam Chair. I'm willing to lend Ms. Larson my 12C if she ever needs it. It's a finance joke for those of you that don't. I just want to take a moment to thank the chairs for this bill. And the reason I ask the question is, you know, we were faced with a pretty big increase just baseline coming in, and trying to figure out how to get schools at least a 2% increase each year on the formula. Senator Wigger, you know, and I have been working on the formula for the last 4 years, recognizing that that is the lifeblood of our schools. That's what pays our teachers, our janitors. That's what buys supplies. It funds everything in the classroom. And I'm proud to be able to stand here and say that we did a 2% increase, and we were able to increase it above what came out of the conference committee. But I'm also pleased with those numbers to be able to say that we've started to try to control the inflation in education. I think that's a dramatic increase to drop it from a 5% increase down to almost a 3% increase through some wise budgeting and still meeting the needs of our students in the classroom. I want to thank Representative Erickson and the House for their very reasonable reforms in the Purpose Center, as we brought that back to make sure that we had transparency to the public, to make sure that we had qualified staff in the key positions in the classroom, but also leading the center and having some accountability not only back to the legislature but to the governor by
having somebody from the Department of Education sitting at the board table. And congratulations on LIFO. We didn't hear it in the Senate, and I'm a bit jealous now that we didn't.
We heard it a lot of times in the House, so you can borrow one of ours.
And, you know, we did hear this, we did hear this bill in 2015 in Senator Reeder's committee, and we had great testimony. And there are a lot of education advocates out there that have said we needed reform. What I'm most pleased about with this reform is that this teachers still have a voice. We're not taking away the teacher's voice in this LIFO reform. We're putting it back in the local districts and as part of the collective bargaining, which is, you know, in my belief, where it should be. So, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, congratulations on a good bill. Representative Erickson, congratulations on your perpetrage reforms in your life. Well, it was reform well needed.
All right. Representative Prisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to both the chairs from the Senate and the House. I think that when we walk out of here, what we can't say is that you didn't listen, that you didn't compromise. It's very obvious that even though we had some impassioned pleas and on both sides of issues, there were a lot of strong thoughts. You listened, and I think you got us to some wonderful places. I do think that where we ended up with the early learning scholarships was a good place to be. I like the program structure. I think, as I said, I think you kept the spirit and the intent. And Senator Pratt, I think you talked about the unrequested leave very well, and I would just add to that what we've done, I believe, is we've added certainty for teachers and for school boards that they can have that conversation. And I think to myself, back as a teacher, how much nicer it would have been to know what your local policy would be and not always be wondering what the legislature is going to do. So to push that certainty down to where it should be, and that is as folks having compromise and conversations, and congratulations. I look forward to hearing it on the House floor and voting for it.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to you and Senator Nelson for just a really, really excellent bill. And, of course, I want to thank Senator Pratt for his partnership, too, in this. But if you think about it, members, we have at least seven pathways to improve teaching. If you look at this bill, we have the major piece, licensure, but we have Grow Your Own, we have Principals Academy, we have agriculture educator grants, we have alternative programs. So we are improving teaching so that the learning will be very definite. For our students, at least a dozen programs, plus the accountability that Senator Pratt mentioned for Perpich. You think about the Santa Foundation and the great work it has done. Reading Corps, Math Corps, parent-child home visits, Rock and Read, which is just a real favorite in the House. The partnerships, third-grade reading from Senator Pratt, Rural CTE from Senator Weber. Those are just wonderful opportunities for our students to learn and to achieve. And finally, we're empowering parents in this proposal. We have the VPK School Readiness Plus changes and improvements, and I know parents are going to look forward to that. The early learning scholarships are for parents to take opportunity. So when you look at it, we have touched every piece of what we're responsible for. Improving learning so that we have increased achievement, improving teaching so we have great learning going on, and empowering our parents. And so, Madam Chairs, I thank you very much for just a wonderful experience working with you and Senator Pratt to bring about such a comprehensive piece of legislation for education in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other comments? That I will call on Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lee. You know, this is a good bill. It started out as very interesting. I don't think it was planned this way, but if you look at how our three bills came together, if you look at the Senate bill and the House bill and the governor's bill, they were actually perfect pieces to all fit together into a comprehensive bill that adequately and fairly funds our schools, but does empower parents, empowers teachers, empowers local school boards, and does those specific things that, as you remember, in the Senate Education Committee, we had these five key principles that we were really focused on. One, obviously, funding students, focus on students and funding what works. That was our overarching theme, and you can see that this bill does that. And then we had these steps along that way to close that achievement gap. And, of course, it started with early learning. We know that kids have to be prepared for kindergarten when they get there. And I'm very excited about the innovative work that we're doing with our earliest learners in this bill. And it took us a while to get here. But, you know, as my dad always told me, Rome was not built in a day. And certainly this session we worked a long time to get to this piece on early childhood and our earliest learners. And I thank the governor for really starting this conversation years ago, and for the House and the Senate, those of us who were there and worked on those first early learning scholarships, which are now known across the nation as Minnesota's early learning model. And it's being touted across the nation. And I think what we have done here with our early learning is that we have added another innovative piece to that Minnesota early learning model. And I know there's a lot of work that has been done on this, and I expect that it will continue, and that it will continue to get better. Most importantly, we'll continue to see more of our students entering kindergarten ready to learn. So I think that is one of the great innovations in this bill. And then, of course, there was the piece that we all struggled to get to. We wanted to be at 2 and 2 on the formula. And even people who are not involved in education, the voice was so loud. I have representatives and senators and people on the street telling me, well, I don't know what 2 and 2 is, but I'm glad it's going to be in the bill. And so I would say that the message has been heard loudly and clearly. And the fact is, we know that that is the bread and butter of education funding, and it is the most fair, and it is the most flexible. And so I'm very glad that we were able to come to that position in the end in that 2 and 2. And many of the colleagues who have mentioned many of the other great programs in this bill, and I'm just very glad to have been a part of this. I do know that it is going to enhance education opportunities for all kids, and I believe that the things that we've really focused on here are going to help us close our embarrassing nation-leading achievement gap. And maybe just the one area that hasn't been touched on by others in this room already is that we did some wonderful things to encourage more dual enrollment. We know that is one of the key ways that kids can get the higher learning credentials they need in a more affordable way. And Minnesota, again, is at the top of this list, which is not a good list. We're in about the top 5 for the highest student debt when our kids graduate. And you probably know people in your life who are struggling with that debt, and it impacts really much of the rest of their life as far as buying a home or starting their families. And so it's really time we start tackling that. And some of the things that we did for dual enrollment here are going to help with that. And I sat right in this room a couple of years ago, and I think many of you were too, in October, when we had the commissioner of the Higher Learning Commission sitting right at that testifying table, and we were grilling her because of the needless and costly regulations that she and that commission were putting on our concurrent enrollment teachers, driving up the cost of concurrent enrollment, and worse than that, making it so less of our teachers were able to teach concurrent enrollment. In fact, in my school district, there were 9 concurrent enrollment classes canceled because of that. Think about that. Almost 300 kids who would not be able to get concurrent enrollment. So what we did in this bill was some things that are actually, well, we were not successful when we were growing the commissioner for the Higher Learning Commission. I'm afraid those unnecessary mandates are in place. But we did not give up, and in this bill we have encouraged and included language and funding so that our teachers
can get those unnecessary courses in a more cost-effective way through online learning. And also, if you've been a teacher, I was teaching when I got my master's degree, and let me tell you, getting it being able to take those courses online is far superior than driving to a college campus at the end of your teaching day. And so we have made it easier to for all of our teachers throughout the state with a statewide partnership to get those concurrent enrollment enhancements. So there are a lot of great things in this bill. I do thank you all for your dedication as we work through the process. It wasn't always easy, and the wonderful thing about bills in the legislature is usually the more input there is, the more we listen, the better those bills get. It also helped us that we got more money along the way to focus on education. So I want to thank Representative Loon for the good work that she and her team have done. And we look forward to getting this bill to the floor in the House and having you let us take it up in the Senate. And again, I do thank all the advocates who have been so patient and also so informative in telling us exactly what the needs are. So, again, thank you, and let's go on to the floor.
All right. Thank you. Well, you all have done an excellent job of describing the bill and what you like about it or concerns. So, again, I'm going to save my remarks for the floor other than say I'm proud of the bill that we put together. I think it's one worthy of broad bipartisan support. It does what we need to do to fund our schools well, to help continue tackling the achievement gap, to moving important decisions about teacher work conditions and that to the local districts where those decisions belong and at the bargaining table, and many of the other things we highlighted. So with that, again, a huge thank you to our staff in particular for long hours, sleepless nights, getting this all buttoned up. You will never know how deeply indebted we all are to all of you for your hard work and always doing it with a smile, or at least not a grimace at us usually. So we appreciate that. So with that, I think we're done with the working group. We're adjourned, and we'll see you all soon on the floor.
Oh yeah.